What's up, Clowncore? This is HVK. You're listening to Americanon, and we have finally our review of Common America Volume 7. I actually had quite a few people requesting, oh, when are you going to get this done? When are you going to get this done? After I got back from my little mini training deployment dealy, it was like I actually got a handful of people, probably about a half a dozen different people, either DMing me and whatnot. So I just want to say I appreciate people reaching out, and I appreciate the fact that people seem to enjoy my reviews, particularly of this series. So I think the best place to start, since this will kind of be, I guess, their penultimate volume before the final volume of their second arc, really, is to kind of go through everything of what's been going on to bring us up to Volume 7. So previously, we had the introduction of the Xena Rangers and the whole Fight the Light movement with the automatons. The Common Core found that the automatons were not, in fact, alien robots from 50, you know, billion light years away or whatever it was. A couple of people asked questions about that, and they were called science deniers. I thought that was pretty funny. So we were introduced to the Xena Rangers, and then we were introduced to Sylvia's stepmom, Cynthia Prestige, who, along with Neera Lansky, is the funding force behind the Xena Rangers, and she also has her own like superhero robo suit, just like Sylvia, and goes by the name Common Unity, who is working with the UN and blah 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 blah, that whole thing, insert globalism jokes kind of whatnot. I don't want to do a complete recap, because if you happen to like it, you should actually go ahead and purchase these books, which I of course highly recommend. So it brings us to Volume 7, and Volume 7 is, well, let me start by breaking it down with the usual positives, right? Let me start by talking about the artwork, because Timothy Lim's artwork, I've said in just about every review, is phenomenal. I really like the sort of anime-esque style. I will have to say, though, for this volume, I feel like if you were to go back to Volume 1 through where he is now, he's getting a lot better at the almost like the sort of comedic delivery and emotive processes with the faces, you know, and it's not that he didn't have life in them before, but I feel like he's actually getting the little details in facial expressions a lot better that kind of make these things hit home a little bit better, as well as perhaps laying out a panel in a way that kind of, especially from the comedic angle, delivers the funny, if you will, all the better. But otherwise, the artwork is really good. I think in terms of action styles, you know, I've said before, as I've gotten more and more into manga, I think the Japanese artists have a way of capturing movement and speed typically a lot better than American artists. And I think Timothy Lim definitely bridges that gap. And you get a lot of that here. We get some new introductions of powers and assists, which will just bring me right into that, some of the positives here. Without spoiling anything, let me get into some of my favorite parts of it, is some of the guest appearances, right? We've seen a lot of guest appearances into their other book, Black Ops, and we've seen a lot of crossover. Black Ops kind of feels like the nexus of like the iconic comics universe, if you will. You know, you have Black Ops, and the Common America characters kind of feed into that at times, and Soulfinder feeds into that. And because of that nexus of Black Ops, now you're getting the crossover more and more with Common America and Soulfinder. Father Redder, from Douglas Ernst's Soulfinder series, makes an appearance here. I think he makes the manner in which, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but the manner in which his appearance happens, you know, my first read through, it was kind of like they make a joke about his appearance being miraculous, and it really does feel that way. Obviously, they control how the story goes. It's not real life, but it's really well done. We get a guest appearance from Usagi and Penelope Freeling, Usagi's handler. Personally, one of my more underrated characters, if I can be honest. I really like Penelope, and I feel like she just doesn't get to be used as much. She's just kind of like the girl with the bunny, right? And great seeing her there. One of my favorite panels is actually after Penelope shows up, Usagi's in the background like slitting the throat of a robot, and the robot has a face. Again, visual gags, right? And Timothy's getting really good at these artistically, and the robot's like basically gagging and grabbing at his throat because, you know, you have the homicidal bunny that just cut his throat. So the Father Redder guest appearance, the Black Hops guest appearance, I like all those things. It makes me feel like their connection is more than just like only in times of story convenience, you know. And what I mean by that is sometimes with Marvel or DC, you know, Joker might be doing something to Gotham and all of Gotham is in complete upheaval. And it's definitely something that at a certain point, other members of the Justice League would step in and, you know, Batman just ends up doing it on his own. Here, when, you know, Carly and the rest of the Common Core are struggling, that's kind of what we're seeing here, is that this is a struggle for them, everything that's going on. And those characters are actually showing up because they are needed in some regard. I'm really liking this story arc with Carly that we're getting throughout this, you know, these several volumes here, where she's trying to be, you know, she's used this phrase several times in some form or fashion, where she is trying to be the embodiment of the ideals of the flag, right? She's trying to be, for lack of a better term, Captain America in some sense, right? She's trying to really earn the name Common America, as opposed to just using the name of something she loves. And there's a weight that's weighing down on her. And one of the things that we see in the first story arc is that Carly, by virtue of who she is, right, she brings Misha into the fold. She brings Sylvia into the fold, both of whom really start out as villains, and she, by her upstandingness, her morality, what, you know, her virtue, she kind of inspires them to have a bit of a change of heart, come on and join her, right? And then there's Kimmy, who just, you know, idolizes her in some regard because of those sorts of things, Kimmy obviously never being a villain. So, you know, Carly's really feeling the weight of that. And you know, if Volume 1 is your, you know, team gathering arc, Volume 2 is the friction arc, right? Every member of the group kind of has certain personal things weighing down on them to varying degrees. And there's friction between, to varying degrees, between each of the girls and Carly. So, you know, there's a lot going on there, and it's developing the characters in a lot of really great ways. I commented how in last volume there is a lot of growth for Sylvia, a character who I didn't care for up until volume 6, and then all of a sudden she was, you know, behind Misha as like my second favorite character, because there was such a wealth of development there. And we get a lot of that with Misha in this one. Definitely a plus for me, seeing a lot more of her background, seeing a lot more of what makes her tick. Having her have a rare moment of vulnerability, you know, Misha being the tough soldier of fortune, you know, just strong type of, I hate using that term because of everything that it's associated with these days, but the really tough, like, alpha wolf kind of woman, and she is having these moments of vulnerability now. Then beyond that, we get the introduction of a lot of more interesting side characters, like the reporter, Carrot and Shtick, which, again, play on words. These guys are really creative with, Tim has mentioned, he mentioned this in the interview that V and I did with them, and I've seen him say this on Twitter numerous times, that they try to make everything mean something in some regard, like it's a reference to something about the character or whatever. And I love that how, as a journalist, her name being Carrot and Shtick is like, I'm going to get the story, and I can either get it by, you know, we can do this the nice way or we can do it the hard way. And I love how she's kind of become this informant for Carly, that she's actually kind of doing the detective work and piecing these things together. And that's what actually makes this feel like a legitimate superhero team, is that nobody fills any one role. Nobody is incompetent. Nobody's useless. Nobody's like even the butt of anything. But there are gaps there. No one person can do everything. And what we're coming up to towards the end of the volume is we're left on a little bit of a quick cliffhanger, right? We see Sylvia talking. Sylvia is not able to join the fight because her armor is being repaired, and she's standing in front of a prison cell. And if you've read some of the previous Black Hop stuff, it means it's one of two people, and they leave it kind of on a cliffhanger. And I will refer to them as Female A or Female B. If it's Female A, hang on, I got like a bunch of notes here, so I want to make sure I have my thoughts organized because there's a lot to dissect in this this story arc. So if it's female A, she's somebody that Sylvia's looking at because Carly definitely needs some closure on stuff that happened previously. A guilt that Carly is still carrying with her, and I think in some regards might be holding her back from really kind of cutting loose on the Xena Rangers. If it's character B, it might be for Misha, who is kind of going through a little bit of a depressive stage herself. She finally broke up with Siggy, which we all kind of knew was coming. I think Tim and Mark weren't really secretive about the fact that this relationship wasn't really going to work out. And if it is character A, she also has some family that she needs to get closure with. I think it's personally character A, because she has some closure there. She might also be able to, by virtue of having a bit of a past with Lansky, if my memory is serving me correctly, having a bit of a past with Lansky might be able to give Sylvia some closure on things. I think this is probably going to be a Sylvia maybe breaks someone out of prison who's not supposed to be broken out of prison. That might kind of put her in the crosshairs. So let's get some predictions and outside things moving forward. First things first, right? So having said all that, and I know it said, probably sounds like I didn't say very much. And again, I'm trying to keep this as spoiler-free as possible. So the art's good. The story is really good. Any negative that I have here is, it's a bit chatty again, but it's needed, and it's offset by the fact that the middle's kind of chatty, but the beginning and the end of the volume have some good action there. The artwork for the action is fantastic. The comedy really lands. Like I said, you get more Misha and her backstory. That's a positive. Usagi and Penelope, for me, that's a big positive. I think realistically, the only other negative I would give it is we got a lot of Sylvia last time, and I wanted to get more of her in this volume, and I didn't get it, and it kind of left me like, oh man, I need to, there's a lot that's going to unload with Sylvia in the next volume, between her and her mom, perhaps between her and Carly, perhaps between her and Black Hops. Sylvia is going to be very pivotal moving forward. So let's get into some predictions and stuff. Now, the first things first, and I don't know if I think I've commented on this before, but I'm going to recover it because I didn't go back through my previous episodes to hear what I said and didn't say. The Xena Rangers. So each of them has a different symbol. Now, if you're familiar with the Xena cards, let me bring it up here just so I'm making sure that I'm saying it correctly. These are things, I know Mark is like a horror monster movie sort of paranormal movie kind of guy. These are something that you see in the first Ghostbusters movie. Bill Murray's character, I believe he plays Venkman, is doing like an ESP check with this young like pretty girl and whatever, and the cards have different symbols on them and she's saying them and they're wrong. These are the Xena cards. These are a I'm just going to use this definition here. Xena cards are cards used to conduct experiments for extrasensory perception, ESP. Perceptual psychologist Carl Xena designed the cards in the early 1930s for experiments conducted with his colleague, parapsychologist J.B. Rhine. These were cards that were basically used to try and test people to see if they had ESP. And I think that kind of fits in some regard with, in a very tongue-in-cheek way, with the story that they have going here, right? Because you have Sylvia Prestige, the UN, the elites, if you will, right? Prestige being a high-class businesswoman, Meyer Lansky being a very wealthy, influential businessman, apparently. The UN is involved with them, and now you have these new superheroes that are supposed to be the elite. These are like the tip of the spear. So they have this ESP or gnosis of the problem of the light pollution issue, right? And, you know, in many ways, it's just a manufactured, it might be a tongue-in-cheek way of saying it's like a manufactured BS sort of thing. You can take that and apply that to real world if you would like for any number of various issues. I think they make the jokes in a very subtle way that if you choose to ignore the real world illusions, they don't. The story still works regardless. Again, it puts it in this timeless category as opposed to making it something that is strictly linked to the current time. Current paradigm, orthodoxy, whatever you will. So there's that. So the Zener Rangers with that link to the Zener cards, they all have their, psychokinetic type abilities, whether it's, psychokinetic, where you can move stuff with your mind, or it's telepathic. I don't remember. But then there's like technopathy, pyropathy. Each of these characters can do different things with their mind, right? And that's where it's kind of come from. I think that's pretty creative. Nero Lansky, this is a name. So again, I started looking more into this because, again, I know Tim has said many times that a lot of these things mean something. So perhaps at times I look too much into him. Nero Lansky, I know the name Meyer Lansky is an old mob dude. I don't think he's alive anymore. And then Nero is the famous Roman emperor that's known for his decadence and his overindulgence and his greed and, greed and degeneracy, if you will. Not quite Caligula, but, therein leading unto the fall of Rome. I'm not sure if that's a connection there. Again, just some certain things that I've looked into. This arc is very obviously leading with the idea of the divide and conquer thing. They even go out of their way and say it several times, don't fall for divide and conquer and all these sorts of things. And, sometimes it's easy to divide and conquer when you have your own personal frictions. And I think that's what we're seeing a little bit, is that sometimes you have to be able to put your own personal frictions aside and not necessarily always follow orders. Because in some way, the Common Core are getting orders. Carly makes a mention at one point, Misha's going to stay in reserve and I'll go out by myself. And then Siggy goes to follow her, and Siggy gets attacked by Zener Ecto. And, all these sorts of things, right? So it's showing that they're not perfect. They make mistakes. They perhaps follow orders when they shouldn't. They get entangled with things in good faith that perhaps they shouldn't. I think we'll probably see something maybe about that with Carly getting Visions by Vanders involved with Kimiko's family, even though it's in good faith. You get these entanglements. They could lead to complications and conflicts of interest. So I think what we'll see next time, I'm going to try and end this here before I hit the 20-minute mark. I think what we see next time is the Zener Rangers will be beaten. I think it'll be a Pyrrhic victory. I think Sylvia's mother, Cynthia, is going to, quote-unquote, win. She'll still be the overarching threat, right? Whether or not she'll have any sort of hold of or Sylvia, who clearly seems to have a lot of faith in her mom, we will have to wait and see, but I do think it'll end up being a Pyrrhic victory of a sort. But I think what this will end up doing is putting Carly in the position where she's going to be, once again, that unifying force, kind of find her true leadership skills. Because that's the one thing, right? Like, the group came together around her, but she's, in my opinion, never really stepped up into that leadership role yet, combining all of the great aspects of each one of them. The strength of Misha, the humility and optimism of Kimmy, and perhaps, the beauty and earnesty perhaps of Sylvia. Carly kind of embodies all these things in a little bits and pieces away. She hasn't really stepped into that forward role though, right? Like that America kind of role, like that leadership manifest destiny, which a lot of people mistake manifest destiny for just meaning that you can conquer whatever you want. If you actually go back and read what Manifest Destiny means, it just means that you end up influencing others by example, effectively. And I think that's what we're waiting to see Carly step into. And that's a lot of the dialogue that you get between her and her father, is that she wants to truly embody those things. So I think what you're going to see with Carly is really step up into that role of, it's really better to be honest and truthful and stand your ground in what you believe is the moral and ethical thing to do. And that's better than being popular or being accepted. You're seeing their negative press with the news and everything, which, if you remember, in a lot of superhero comics, Spider-Man, Batman, what have you, the hero always does tend to have that, the hero or menace, nobody really knows. So perhaps they might be going in a direction with that, where she just kind of roots herself and is just like, no, this is the right thing to do. And if you don't like it, too damn bad. So it'll be interesting. I think the Zener Rangers are just a means to an end for Cynthia Prestige. I think there's definitely more at play with her than that. I don't think the Zener Rangers are necessarily the big villain. I think they are just her tools, her means to an end. I think she's pretty obvious in that, although I do think it's interesting that Zener Pyro, we see glimpses of him where they actually do want to be, some of them at the very least, do actually want to be heroes, and he may very well be the only one. Perhaps we see a bit of a turn with him, and that enables, you know, some help for the Common Core and Black Ops moving forward. Wait and see. There's a lot going on in this arc. There's a lot to digest. There's a lot of little hints and things that I'm sure I've missed along the way. But I'm doing my best to try and pick up on all the breadcrumbs that they are laying down, because it is a very, you know, for you can say what you will about superhero stories, but this one's a very in-depth one. They definitely put thought and time into constructing this world, these characters, how they interact, everything from the names, all that. It's a really good job. My last thing, I'll end with this, and this is just a little bit of a request to Mark and Tim, if this is they happen to hear it. Please, for the love of God, don't have Misha date the Icetosterone. I would probably die a little bit inside if you guys did that. I don't need that frenemy relationship for somebody like Misha. I like the development. Frankly, I find him kind of annoying. So please, for the love of God, don't have that be the case. But I'm not that lucky. So I hope everybody enjoyed this review. If you've happened to listen to this entire 20-minute spiel of mine, I appreciate it. As always, if you happen to like it, you can follow us on Spotify or Podbean or Twitter at @HVK_Americanon on Twitter, or you can just search Americanon on the previous two. We are the only one. We do reviews, we do, you know, jokes and make fun of stuff in our Clown World shows about gaming and comics and movies and all kinds of stuff there. I like to do Metal Mondays, give some new metal recommendations to the initiated and the veteran alike in the metal music scene. So we try to do a little something of all the stuff that we enjoy here. So hopefully you guys found this review helpful. I highly recommend this book. I highly recommend their Black Ops book. And also, if you can get your hands on it, as a side note, when I pre-ordered this, not pre-ordered it, but when I backed this on Kickstarter, they also kicked in the Common America Gaiden, which kind of puts together a lot of their web series stuff and their short story stuff, and that focuses far more on the comedic side. It's a great read, especially if you only got like 5-10 minutes and instead of just sitting around wasting time on your phone, you can actually read something that's well-written and funny and actually witty. Common America Gaiden's a great pickup as well. The artwork is just as good. They don't half-ass anything. So that's a great pickup as well. So thank you guys for listening. Hopefully you found this review useful, like I said. And hopefully maybe Mark and Tim happen to like the reviews enough. Maybe I get a little Grim Reaper dude that gets blown up by Father Rather or something. That'd be kind of funny. In one of the final issues. But anyway, Clown Core, that's all I got for this one. The end.